Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the Air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater Program, 341 in the series. It's December 2nd. Boy, 1981. That's when 1981 is the first year. I was about to say 81 instead of 18.
What are you talking about?
1981 was the first year I was on the radio. You know that,
Lisa? Okay. I didn't know where you're headed with that.
I was kind of thinking, we were talking a little earlier. Yep. I've always been fascinated with radio. Radio has always been such an interesting medium, you know? There's no visual. And you use your imagination, and that's why I think I love these classic radio shows so much. But I got interested in radio at a very young age, and when I got into college, I took communications as a major. And here we are, Lisa Wolf, on WGN Radio.
I've always been amazed by audio and voice as well.
Yeah?
Interesting.
And
just
calling up radio stations and winning prizes.
Well, you know, just in the way I'd, you know, carry my microphone around with my cassette tape and just...
Like a Radio Shack and
kind of
mixer.
Thing, yeah. And interview people and play it
as
back
a kid,
and listen
old,
to myself.
How old were you when you used to interview people?
Oh, very young. Like,
really?
That was just a thing.
30? 35?
Yeah. No, I was in my 40s. Yeah. I used to walk around the house and just interview people.
In your pajamas.
Right? Who needs to wear clothes when you interview?
You're like, hello, Mr. Matanky. I'd like to interview you.
Something like that.
I was just thinking about my first radio broadcast was college, 1981. WRRG, Triton College Radio. Wendy Snyder went to that same college.
And who would have thought we'd be brought together to combine forces here.
I know, and I knew Wendy back then. Not like really well, but I remember seeing her at WRRG a lot. And now we work at the same radio station together. And then you and I met when you auditioned for a Twilight Zone radio drama, and here we are on WGN.
And I just couldn't stay away.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. Yeah. I love radio, and I hope that we do this show for a long, long time. And tonight we're going to play Gunsmoke from 1954, a Christmas Day show from December 25th called Kitty Lost from CBS Radio. William Conrad is U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon. Then after that, Roddy McDowell stars as host of Lullaby of Christmas on Family Theater from 1951. So two great Christmas shows for you. We will be running Christmas shows all the way until Christmas. But happy Hanukkah.
Thank you.
Happy Hanukkah
tonight at sundown.
And for those who celebrate Hanukkah, happy Hanukkah.
Yes.
Sundown it starts?
Mm-hmm. It started.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
It's like OK Corral, meet me at sundown.
That's right. It's
gonna
kind
have
of mysterious.
Meet me at sundown at the OK Corral.
That's right.
All right, so Gunsmoke's coming your way in just a few minutes, but we're going to play our game, right?
We are. The celebrity is Gregory Peck.
Gregory Peck.
Yep, and the prize will be a certificate for a desktop sports-themed artificial tree from Tree Time Christmas Creations.
All right, so play Cat's Pride, Real or Ridiculous with us. Call us at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. What caller would you
caller
like?
Caller 6.
Caller 6. Call now. We'll play the game. We'll be right back.
Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous.
We have John on the phone. Hey, John.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Great.
Good. You ready to play a little Real or Ridiculous?
Yes.
All right. We've got Gregory Peck, and Carl is an excellent lifeline.
Hi, John. How are you? We'll see.
We'll see how that goes. Okay. Gregory Peck was exempt from military service in the Second World War because of a back injury. Is that real or ridiculous?
Real.
Carl?
Wow. It sounds real, but, you know, she's pretty tricky, John. I'm going to say ridiculous.
It's real. Ah. It is absolutely real. Yeah. He sustained the injury during his actor training.
Oh.
Yeah, you're good, John. You're good.
Good job,
John. All right. In 1983, Gregory Peck was admitted to the International Best Dressed List Hall of Fame. Is that real or ridiculous?
What year?
1983.
Hmm.
Best Dressed List Hall of Fame. What do you think, John?
Real.
I agree. Real.
Real. It is real.
Yeah.
All right, John. All you right, got two John. Out of two. Number three. He was offered the role of Grandpa Joe in the 2005 film of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Ridiculous.
I'm going to say real.
It's actually real.
Ooh.
He died before he could accept it.
Wow.
So, but it was real. But you did a great job. You got two out of three. You're a great winner.
What about me? I got two out of three.
Yeah,
also.
But John's the winner here. Carl's, but look at me. Look at me.
I'm over here.
Carl's like Mom, jumping up and down and
Mom,
raising
watch,
his
I'm
hand.
Mom, watch. I'm going to dive into the pool. Mom, watch me. Watch
Mom,
me.
Mom. John, you are the winner here, not Carl. You won a certificate for a desktop pre-lit sports-themed artificial tree from Tree Time Christmas Creations on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington, featuring the most ginormous selection of artificial Christmas trees and unique decorations anywhere. I hope that you enjoy that.
That is great. I really appreciate it. Thank
Terrific.
You.
Thanks for calling
Thanks,
in.
John. Appreciate you. John is a big winner, Lisa.
He sure is.
He won.
And you did a good, pretty good job there, Carl.
Two out of three.
That's pretty good because I
came
am
Came back
tricky.
Strong because I missed the first one. I came back with two in a row.
That's right.
So
we'll be back next hour with another game.
That's right. All right. If you want to text us, folks, we love getting your texts. The text in line is 312-981-7200. Did you have a nap today, Lisa?
I didn't, but
no
I
nap?
Slept well last night. I slept late, okay. And I'm ready for your texts.
I did not have a nap either, but I think I'll be all right. I don't know. For some reason, I slept late. I slept till like 11
I
o'clock.
I just said that. You can't say that,
I slept
too.
Till like 11 a.m. Oh, my gosh. I'm normally up at 6 a.m.
Okay, this is becoming too much information.
But I was all right. So you ready for Gunsmoke?
Yes.
All right. You know all about Gunsmoke, right?
I do. A little bit.
It was an adult Western radio series. It was not aimed at kids at all. I mean, there was a lot of Westerns on the radio, like Hopalong Cassidy and Red Rider and Straight Arrow and, you know, Lone Ranger. These were all aimed at kids. Well, not Gunsmoke. When Gunsmoke came to radio in 1952, it had one demo in mind, and that was adults, because it was really very adult-oriented, you know, the themes. There was people dying on, you know, on the planes, and it was all kinds of stuff. And the lead person on this show was William Conrad as U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon. And he was self-described as a lonely, isolated man toughened by a hard life. He was the sheriff of Dodge City, Kansas, and there was all kinds of bad people coming through that town, and he kept law and order in that town. And it was probably the most popular television show of the 50s, 60s, and early 70s. Came to television in 1955, lasted all the way until 1974. And James Arness played the role of U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon on television, but William Conrad was great on radio as Dillon, as you'll hear on this program, from Christmas Day of 1954. It's called Kitty Lost. Here is part one now of Gunsmoke.
Gunsmoke. Around Dodge City and in the territory on west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad, the transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America, and the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
Sussex. Oh, hello, Chester.
Oh, hello, John. Gone the luck anyway. Mr. Dillon?
Well, how are you, Chester?
How long have you been standing here?
Oh, not long. I'm waiting to go to dinner with Doc, if he ever comes out of his office.
Well, have you been here a half hour?
No, not that long, I don't think. Why?
No, I thought maybe you'd seen Miss Kitty out here in the street somewhere.
No, I haven't seen her.
She's got to be someplace.
Well, I expect she is, Chester.
Well, there's no place I know of. I can't find her.
How'd you try the Longhorn?
Oh, no, sir. She's never in there before afternoon sometime.
Well, what about her room?
That's where I was supposed to meet her, Mr. Dillon. But she ain't there and nobody saw her. Nobody I talked to, anyway.
She'll be around.
Yeah, but it ain't like Miss Kitty not to be where she says she'll be.
I don't get so worried, Chester. It can't be that important.
Well, it's pretty important to me.
Oh?
Yes, sir. I got a date tonight with a little girl who worked over at the Alphaganza.
What's that got to do with Kitty?
Well, my only pair of good pants got busted, Mr. Dillon, and Miss Kitty was patching them up for me. She told me to come pick them up today, just before noon.
No wonder you're worried. Is this a new girl that you got, Chester?
Yes, sir. Well, she's new to me. Little southern gal with a mouthful of honey, Mr. Dillon.
Honey, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that makes good bait for old bears like you.
Oh, Mr. Dillon, I ain't no bear. Not really.
Hello, Matt.
Yeah, hello, Doc.
Doc, how are you?
Oh, I hope I haven't kept you waiting too long, Matt.
Well, that's okay, Doc. Now I won't have to worry if I'm the one that's late next time.
Huh? I'm not the one that's late.
Oh, you're not?
No. Kitty is.
Kitty?
Yes, she said yesterday she'd be in at noon. Wanted me to look at a tooth that's been bothering her, and I promised I'd be there, but I can't wait forever.
It seems like Kitty's late all the way around today, doesn't it?
I was supposed to see her too, Doc, but I can't find her no place. Well, it doesn't matter. She's probably sleeping in for a change.
No, she ain't. I've been to her room. Nobody saw her around there at all. Is that so?
She said she'd be there.
Well, come to think of it, it's not like Kitty. When she says she'll be there, she's there. It kindly worries me.
Now, you two getting all worked up over nothing, Kitty, isn't that clock-like?
Well, then where is she, Matt?
I don't know where she is. Kitty's a big girl. She can take care of herself. Now, stop worrying about her.
Hey, here comes Sam Noonan. Maybe he knows where she's at.
Well, how would he know?
Well, Miss Kitty works for him at the Long Branch, don't you?
Sure, but Sam doesn't keep her on a string. Her times are wrong.
Morning, gentlemen.
Hello, Sam.
How are you,
Sam? Sam, you ain't seen Miss Kitty around today, have you?
Oh, Chester, I ain't. Those two men standing here thought I'd come ask you.
You mean that you're looking for her, too?
Well, she was going to come to the Long Branch about 10 o'clock. Went down early to meet her, and she ain't showed up yet, Marshal.
10 o'clock's pretty early for Kitty, isn't it, Sam?
Well, sure, but she was doing it as a favor to me. I want to get started repainting the place, and she was going to give me some ideas about making it real fancy. She said she'd be there, and I got a man waiting to go to work on it this afternoon.
You know, it beats me. Kitty takes one morning off, and everybody in Dodge is out looking for it.
Well, I don't know about everybody else, Marshal, but I do know when Kitty says she'll do something, she does it.
That's just what we've been saying, Sam. Where do you think she's got to, anyway?
I ain't gone looking for it, Chester. I've just been waiting.
Matt.
Yeah, what, Doc?
Kitty might miss one appointment. But she'd never in the world miss three.
Who saw her last? You, Sam? What time did you leave the Long Branch last night?
It was early, Marshal. It was real early.
Oh, why? Where did she go?
Well, she was talking to some dude from back east. I never saw him before, and they both disappeared about 10 o'clock. I don't know where they went.
She didn't come back?
That's the last I seen of her.
Who is this dude? Do you know his name?
No, I don't. He was a tall, thin fella in fancy clothes. That's all I know.
I don't trust them dudes. Never did.
Well, maybe we better find him and talk to him.
Well, where are we going to find him?
The Dodge House, Chester. A man like that wouldn't stop anyplace else. Look, Doc, you better go ahead and eat. I'll join you if I can.
Say, maybe this fella got her outside and knocked her in the head and robbed her, Mr. Dillon.
Kitty doesn't carry money on her, Chester.
Well, she wears jewelry.
She's also over 21 years old, and she's got enough sense not to let anybody knock her on the head.
And if he did, I suppose somebody would have found her by now.
Yeah, sure.
Hey, look. Mr. Doby himself at the desk in there.
Oh, good.
Well, hello, Marshal. Chester.
Hello, Mr. Doby.
Hiya, Doby.
Now, don't tell me the Dodge House has taken in another gunman. You're going to shoot the place up again.
Well, that wouldn't happen so often if you'd make your guests check their guns, Doby.
Kind of people come in here to take the army to do that.
That's a poor rule anyway. A man can always hide a gun.
Or a knife.
It's not that kind of a man I'm looking for this time, Doby. It's an Easterner, some dude.
What's his name?
Well, I don't know his name, but he's tall and thin, and he's a sort of a fancy dresser. He's new to Dodge.
Must be that fella Rackmill.
Rackmill?
He fits your description, but he sure didn't look like no troublemaker to me. What's he done?
I don't know, Toby. I don't know. Maybe nothing. Is he in his room?
No, he ain't. Funny thing, now you mention it. Clerk told me this morning that Rackmill didn't come in at all last night.
He didn't?
I didn't think nothing about it till now. Oh, you know how some fellas are. They get to playing cards or something.
He ain't up to no good, Mr. Dillon. I just know he ain't.
Doby, what do you know about him?
I told you all I know. He come here day before yesterday. Said he was traveling around, seeing the West. I don't think he's working. He don't act sharp enough to be a gambler.
Okay, Doby, thanks. Thanks very much. If he does come in, don't say anything about my being here, will you?
Not a word, Marshal. But I sent somebody after you if you want.
Good.
I gotta go find that clerk. I ain't paying him for me to stand here all day.
Well, what are you gonna do now, Mr. Dillon?
Look, I tell you, Chester, you go down and check the stage, huh? I'm gonna go over to the depot and I'll see you back at the office.
You think he might have kidnapped her?
Well, we'll know when we find her, Chester.
All right, that's the first portion of Gunsmoke with Kitty Lost from Christmas of 1954, December 25th to be exact. William Conrad as U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon.
You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen. But do you recall the most famous reindeer?
Speaking of reindeers, Lisa, do you know
reindeer.
Why...
It's just reindeer.
Okay, reindeer. Do you know why Dasher and Dancer love coffee so much? Because they're Santa's Starbucks.
Oh. You would even say... That's a good one, Carl.
Yeah,
I'm
thanks.
Laughing inside.
Yeah, I could tell how much you really like that
show. What's the name of this show again? I'm sorry, what?
Huh? What?
What is going on?
What?
What?
All right, we got to get back to this.
Please.
This is called Kitty Lost from December 25th, 1954, the conclusion of Gunsmoke.
Find anything, Chester? Oh, hello, Doc.
Oh, well, hello, Matt. Nobody ain't seen him at the stage office, Mr. Dillon. There's only one stage out today, and that left this morning, and they wasn't on it.
Yeah, Matt, I didn't think they would be.
What about the train? Did they leave on that?
They remember Rackmill when he came in the other day, but he hasn't bought any ticket to leave.
Then he must be somewhere in Dodge, Matt.
I stopped by Miss Kitty's room on my way back, Mr. Dillon. She ain't been in yet.
You know, they tell me back in New York, some policemen do nothing but look for people that are missing. That's how many disappear all the time.
Do they find them, Doc?
Sometimes, yes, of course. They always check the city morgue first. Oh, that's where they find a lot of
people that got killed, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, some just fall down and die on the streets. Heart seizure, you know, something like that kind of hits them. But, of course, a lot of them are victims of murder. Or killing, one kind of, you know, fights and things like that.
Yeah, it must happen a lot. They got so many people living there.
It does. But it can happen anywhere, Chester. Only in New York, they're better organized to locate people that are missing them and don't come home when they should.
Always check the morgue first, huh?
Yeah, oh, that's the best place. It saves a lot of time and trouble.
Hey, we ought to have a morgue here in Dodge.
Oh, whatever. Oh, Jeff, we don't need one. Dodge isn't big enough for a morgue.
No, I guess it ain't. And besides, people don't come up missing here very often.
Well, if you two well-wishers have got the morgue problem settled, I'd like to say something.
Why, surely, Matt. Go ahead.
If Kitty was in Dodge, we'd have heard from her by now. I'm presuming she's alive, of course, Doc, if that doesn't go too much against your theory.
Oh, of course she is, Matt. Of course she's alive. I was telling Chester about things back east, that's all.
And if she's left Dodge and she didn't go by stage or by train, then there's only one other way that she could have gone, isn't there?
You mean she walked?
That'd be about as likely as you walking somewhere, Chester. I don't know why I didn't think about it before. Let's go down to the stable.
I don't know why I didn't think about them going horseback either, Mr. Dillon. I guess maybe it's because they say that fellow Racknell's a dude. Horses don't seem his style.
We don't know that much about him, Chester.
What if he went alone? What if he didn't take Miss Kitty with him after all?
Well, he can go anywhere he wants to. Alone.
Well, I don't see Moss Grimmick nowhere.
Hey, Moss! Moss Grimmick! Hey!
Here now. Who's doing all that hollering?
He's laying in that stall over there, Mr. Dillon. He's been sleeping.
Yeah.
Oh, it's you, Marshal. Chester, you woke me up.
I'm sorry to bother you, Moss, but I got to talk to you.
Trouble, Marshal?
Well, I don't know. But if there is, maybe you can help me.
Always willing to help, Marshal.
Tell me, have you rented out any horses lately, Moss, last night or today?
No, I haven't. Business has been mighty slow all week, Marshal.
No, you haven't. You sure?
Well, you mean saddle horses, don't you?
Yeah, sure.
I thought so. No man's going to make a getaway in a buggy, is he?
In a buggy? What, do you rent buggies?
Not often, but I did last night. By golly, I'm glad you reminded me. He ain't brought it back yet. That fellow still got my buggy, Marshal.
Who was it, Moss?
Some stranger I never saw him before.
Was he an Easterner?
Me from around here, not in them clothes.
Did he, have anybody with him?
Yeah, he had a girl. She waited outside for him. I didn't pay no attention to her. It was a good moon last night, and they was going for a little drive. But I wanted my horse and buggy back, Marshal. You think they went and stole it?
Tell me, Moss, did he say where they were going?
Said something about Indian Spring. Asked me how far it was. I told him 20 miles. He figured that was too far, but said maybe they drive down partway. What'll I do, Marshal?
Oh, what time was it when they took the buggy?
10 o'clock, maybe.
No, there's nothing down toward Indian Spring I know of, Mr. Dillon. There's hardly even any ranches down there. They must have run into trouble of some kind.
Maybe that's it, Marshal. I'll tell you. I didn't bother to mention it since they wasn't going far, but one of the iron rims is off the left wheel on that buggy. Could be they hit a rock and the wheel busted.
Yeah, maybe. But it doesn't take all night and half a day to walk 20 miles. But don't worry about your buggy, Moss. We'll find it. There was no trail going to Indian Spring, so all we could do was start out in the general direction and then ride back and forth across the prairie till we found the buggy tracks. That took an hour, but from then on it was easy. We covered the first 10 miles fast, so fast that we almost missed where the buggy had stopped and a woman's footprints led away from it. We followed these for a mile or two, and then up ahead we suddenly saw puffs of smoke coming from a clump of box elder, Indian style.
That must be Miss Kitty in there, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah.
Well, is she signaling or what?
Well, it looks like it.
And she must be in trouble.
Maybe.
That rack mill fellow must have put her out and just left her to starve. Now, why would he do a thing like that?
Well, he's not going to get far enough in that buggy for me not to ask him personally, Justin. But first, we'll take care of Kitty.
There she is. She sees us. She's waving. Hi, Miss Kitty. Oh, she's all right, Mr. Dillon. She ain't hurt. Oh, look. Over evermore. She's been using a petticoat to make them smoke signals with.
Smoke signal? You found me?
No, we tracked you, Miss Kitty. Sure is good to see you.
What's the matter with your ankle, Kitty?
Oh, I turned it. It's not that swollen. How'd you know?
Well, I could tell by your tracks back there that you were favoring it.
I never noticed that.
Well, that's why I had to stop walking, Matt. I knew it'd get worse and I'd never make Dodge on it. Figured I was better off here than out in the prairie where I couldn't even build a fire.
Well, that was smart of you, Kitty. Look, you can ride on one of our horses' back and we'll go double, huh?
In this skirt?
Huh. Well, one of us can wait here with you while the other one goes and fetches a buggy, okay?
No, that'd take too long. I'll make it. I can ride side saddle if we don't go too fast.
Okay. You must be hungry. You know, we didn't think to bring anything to eat.
I'm starved. At least I've had water. There's a tiny little spring under that rock over there.
Yeah. You're lucky you had matches, too.
Oh, I wish I'd had a gun. It's alive with rabbits around here.
Well, you could have trapped some if you hadn't stayed here long enough. I'll show you how someday.
Thanks. I hope I never need to know how.
Oh, Chester, Will you go get our hat and stuff and then throw some sand on that fire?
All right, sir. And I'll have me a drink of water while I'm at it, too.
Then we'll get started for Dodge, Kitty. Yeah, the sooner we get there, the sooner you can eat.
A side of beef and a sack of potatoes would make a good start.
You know, come to think of it, I missed dinner myself. I'll join you.
I'm sorry I'm so much trouble, Matt.
Nah. As long as you're safe. You know, you had everybody worried. Me and Chester and Doc, Sam Noonan.
I know. I've been thinking about it. Matt?
Yeah.
I turned up missing, so you scout around and finally tracked me down clear out here in the prairie and find me standing around on one foot in a bunch of little trees, playing Indian. And you don't even ask me how I got here.
I know how you got here.
Well, sure, of course. With Jim Rackmill and that fool buggy. Partway, anyhow. But that's not what I mean, man.
Well, if he'd been out to kidnap or murder you, I guess you'd have mentioned it before this, wouldn't you?
I felt so silly. I feel like a fool telling it.
Well, go ahead, say it. It can't be that bad.
Rackmill's an Easterner. He's never been out here before. And well, we got to talking. And he said he'd like to see the prairie in the moonlight. It was my idea we rent a buggy and take a drive for an hour or so. Anything to get out of that smoky saloon for a while. So we did.
And he tried to hold your hand. And you got mad. And you slapped him. And you jumped down and you started walking.
How'd you know that?
I know you, Kitty. You know, sometimes you've got a terrible temper.
Well, I paid for it this time. Honest, Matt, that's all he did. Tried to hold my hand.
I believe it. You know, but you'd have been smarter if you just slapped him and let it go at that. You could have ridden back to Dodge in style.
Why'd I have to act like a schoolgirl, Matt?
I don't know, Kitty. Some people grow up slow. But I'll tell you one thing. It's a lot better than growing up too fast.
Oh, thanks for that, anyway, Matt.
Hey, look out yonder, Mr. Dillon. Look what's coming.
What?
It's Rackmill and the buggy. I forgot all about him. Where in the world's he been all this time?
Well, looks like we ain't gonna have to run him down after all, don't it?
Well, he didn't do anything, Chester. He tried to hold my hand.
Well, he sure looks wild now.
Now, listen, you two. You stay out of this. Leave Racknell to me. I'll handle him.
Come on, Chester. Let's ease up those saddles, huh?
Yes, sir.
Miss Kitty. Miss Kitty, are you all right?
Am I all right?
I've been going crazy trying to find you. It was dark, and you disappeared so fast, and then I finally saw the smoke a while ago.
You did, huh? How'd you know that smoke wasn't Indian?
Well, I didn't know. In fact, I thought it must be. I had to make sure, Miss Kitty.
But, dude, you're a pretty brave man, Mr. Rocknell.
Oh, I knew it wasn't Indians as soon as I saw them. Have they been bothering you, Miss Kitty?
What?
Come on, Miss Kitty. Get in the buggy.
Aren't you forgetting I got out of that buggy once?
We'll talk about it later. Take my arm. Take it.
Well, I'll say one thing, Mr. Rocknell. You're sure right about going crazy.
Please, Miss Kitty.
No. I like it here. I've been real comfortable. I'm going to stay. Learn how to trap rabbits. I may decide to live here, Mr. Rocknell.
No, no, no. You don't understand. Miss Kitty, we're all alone way out in the prairie. I don't like the looks of those men. I've got to get you out of here.
You've got to get me out of here. You.
Please be sensible before it's too late.
It's already too late. Now, get in your buggy and go on back to Dodge, if you can find it.
I can find it, all right. I promise you I can. Come, Miss Kitty.
Which way is Dodge?
Well, why, it's right back there.
You're pointing towards Texas.
Well, it doesn't matter. We'll find it. I won't leave you here, Miss Kitty. I don't care how mad you get.
Oh, I'm getting mad again,
It doesn't matter. I don't blame you for last night. I apologize. I shouldn't have tried to hold your hand. I just lost myself for a moment, that's all. It won't happen again, I promise you. But I am not going to leave you here.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Racknell. I've been unfair. I do have a bad temper, you know.
Yes, I know.
And you're right about those two. They are a pretty tough-looking pair, aren't they?
They're coming back.
As a matter of fact, they do look more like desperados than lawmen.
Lawmen?
Mr. Racknell, this is Marshall Dillon of Dodge City, Kansas.
Marshall Dillon?
And that's Chester Proudfoot.
How do you do?
How do you do?
It's okay, Racknell. We're not after you.
I didn't know that she knew you. I mean, I thought you were strangers.
No, we're not strangers. In fact, we rode out here to find Kitty.
I've been trying to find her, too. All night and all day, I've been driving round and round.
Now, wait a minute. You men aren't going to make all this my fault. I only did what any lady would do.
Kitty, you'd do a lot better if you get something to eat.
Eat? What are we standing around here for? Matt, will you and Chester ride along with us?
Sure, we will, Kitty.
And Mr. Racknell, when we get to Dodge, maybe you'll have supper with us.
That's very kind of you, Miss Kitty.
Good. Now, if you'll hold my hand, you can help me into the buggy.
And now our star, William Conrad.
Thank you, George. I sincerely hope this is the merriest Christmas ever for you and those close to you.
Gunsmoke, produced and transcribed under the direction of Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Our story was specially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterns by Tom Hanley and Ray Kemper. Featured in the cast were John Daner, James Nusser, Barney Phillips, and Vic Perrin. Marley Bear is Chester, Howard McNear is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke. Remember, listen again next week for another story of the Western Frontier when Marshal Matt Dillon, Chester Proudfoot, Doc, and Kitty, together with all the other hard-living citizens of Dodge, will be with you once more. It's America growing west in the 1870s. It's drama. It's Gunsmoke.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
That's one of the best westerns of the golden age of radio, maybe the best western of the golden age of radio, especially if you're talking about adult westerns. There was Have Gun, Will Travel, which was very good. And I'm trying to think of some other. Well, Luke Slaughter of Tombstone was good. Fort Laramie was good. Well, I'm talking about adult westerns now. So, I mean, The Lone Ranger was more for kids, Hopalong Cassidy. But Gunsmoke was quite the radio show, as you just heard. Good Christmas show from Christmas Day of 1954. Kitty Loss with William Conrad as U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon. It's heard on CBS. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more of the WGN Radio Theater. You should get that, Lisa. GetDentalInfo.com. How many times you're at the dentist?
I just got a dental insurance program.
You did? Some sort.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's
wow.
The whole family.
Wow.
It just gives you a reduction in price.
I am so bad at that kind of stuff, like clipping coupons and doing this.
Oh,
and
I don't do that.
I am the worst.
Well,
so
the only reason I did
this. It would make no sense for me to get that.
Well, it's because you can use any dentist you want.
That's
so
nice.
I don't
just
shop
go
around.
And I end up paying full price.
I'm sure you do.
Because I'm just.
Because you can afford it.
No, it's not. That's not why. The reason why that I do stuff like that is because I'm not organized when it comes to saving, you know, this code and do that and, you know, put it on the app. Which,
it's
you know,
time
you know me,
consuming
I can't
is what it
put
is.
Put stuff on apps. But you know what we recently did, which is a really cool technology? We have now added a digital option to the Classic Radio Club membership. I'm very excited about it. It works flawlessly. We've had a lot of people already sign up for it. If you go to the Classic Radio Club, you can now choose to get digital downloads. Not only do you save the shipping and handling of $4.99 a month, but it's also less expensive. Introductory offer for the 10 classic radio shows is only $4.99. You don't pay any shipping and handling. We digitally send you through the email the 10 shows and the liner notes on a PDF. And then every month, you get 10 more shows. These are the 10 shows that I choose for people. And it's only $9.99.
And it's the same exact shows that you are putting on the CDs.
Same exact ones.
Same club, just in a different method.
Every single month, I choose 10 shows, 10 different shows from my library of over 100,000 shows. And if you're a club member, you will never get a duplicate show. Every month, you'll get 10 new shows. You can choose the CD version, which means you'll get 5 CDs sent to your home in a collector case, 10 shows. For initially, it's only $4.99 plus $4.99 shipping and handling. Then after that, it's $14.99 plus $4.99 shipping and handling. That's for the 5 CDs. But it's a $40 product. It's a $40 product for only $14.99 plus shipping and handling. But you can now get the digital option. You don't get the CDs, but you get them for only $1 a show via digital download. So this is a way to get the and these are the shows with all the commercials. Nothing's edited out. Even if there's a cigarette commercial, it's in there. Everything's in there. We don't edit anything on the shows that you get through the Classic Radio Club. Plus, you get the liner notes that I write. So, folks, I think you will really enjoy being a member. We have hundreds and hundreds of members. Go to ClassicRadioClub.com. ClassicRadioClub.com. And you know what? For Christmas, you might want to give a membership to someone who loves classic radio. And every single month, they will get something sent to them from you if you sign them up. So check it out, ClassicRadioClub.com. And I know you're a member and you like giving.
I sure am.
She shares the CDs with her mom and dad.
Yep, I sure do.
All right. In our next hour, we are going to tune in to Family Theater. It's called Lullaby of Christmas, and the host is Roddy McDowell. And a very good episode coming your way.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it is 12:06. Thanks, Roger Badish. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa Wolf and I playing your favorite classic radio shows every Saturday and Sunday night. We begin at 11 p.m., and we're here till 2 o'clock in the morning on Saturdays and till 1 o'clock in the morning on Saturday. So we're 5 hours on the air, Lisa. Not bad.
No, not bad. We're
five
not complaining.
5 hours. Yeah, we play games and we
give away prizes and we argue a little bit along
just a
the
little
way.
Bit. Once in a while, we'll play a song or two, but we always play your favorite classic radio shows. You know, Lisa, I have been working diligently on the schedule for next year.
Yes, I was just talking
diligently.
About that.
Oh, my gosh. And I know people really like You Bet Your Life, so I scheduled three episodes throughout the year. And I scheduled a lot of episodes of The Shadow.
Right.
And a lot of episodes of Suspense.
Okay.
And a lot of episodes of Jack Benny.
Good.
Several episodes of My Friend Irma and My Favorite Husband for You. But I scheduled at least one, maybe two, of the five-part Yours Truly, Johnny Dollars.
That's great.
And you know what else I did? I think our listeners are really going to like this.
I don't know.
I did some weekends that are like all Western weekends and some all sci-fi weekends and some all comedy weekends.
Yeah, those go over really well. People tend to like that.
All detective. And then you know what else I did?
I can't imagine.
So we don't play Lux Radio Theater that often because they're hour-long shows. But you know what I did? I did schedule several of them on Sunday nights because we're here for from 11 to 1. And so we're going to play half of the show in the first hour.
Got it.
And the other half in the second hour.
Yeah, no reason why not.
And then one weekend, I thought this was kind of interesting. I'm playing on Lux Theater. We're playing The Third Man, you know, the movie The Third Man. But then on the night before, we're playing The Lives of Harry Lime, which is based on The Third Man movie. So I did stuff like that. So I'm trying to, you know, shake it up a little bit.
Trying to do a good job.
Shake it up.
Trying to do something around here.
Shake it up.
Earn your pay. Oh,
the
no.
The Cars, right? Wasn't that The Cars?
Yeah,
shake
that's
it up.
The Cars.
I like that song.
I like that one, too.
All right. You know what? In this hour, it's Family Theater from 1951, Lullaby of Christmas. The host is Roddy McDowell. Remember what probably his most famous movie was, Roddy McDowell? Was Planet of the Apes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Planet of the Apes. He was one of the monkeys in there.
Wasn't a big fan of that.
That was a great movie, the original one. Oh, my gosh. Charlton Heston.
Is it possible we used to have records of Planet of the Apes?
No.
No?
Probably not.
What kind
I don't
of records?
Think so.
For some reason, I'm picturing that.
All right. So we have Family Theater coming your way. But first, we're going to play Cat's Pride.
We're going to play a little Cat's Pride, Real or Ridiculous, our new game. It's award-winning, by the way. So that's going really well. And the celebrity.
I gave it an award, so it's award-winning.
The celebrity is Clint Eastwood, one of your favorites.
Oh, I'll get all three right.
Okay. And the prize will be the coveted. WGN desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weather Makers Heating and Cooling.
All right. Sounds good. Okay. What caller would you
like?
We're
going to go with caller three.
Caller three, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. I'm going to get all three right, Lisa.
I
I'm
hope
predicting
you do.
All three of them right.
Okey-doke.
Call now. We'll play our game after these words. Come on, baby. Let's
get ridiculous. We're going to talk to Howard on the phone. Hey, Howard.
Good morning. How are
Good
you?
Good morning. I'm great.
Hi,
how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Terrific. We're glad you called in. We're going to play a little Cat's Pride, Real or Ridiculous. And the celebrity is Clint Eastwood. And Carl's feeling pretty good over there. Okay.
I'm going to make your day.
Okay. Well, Howard, you're a winner no matter what. Okay, number one, Clint Eastwood spent his early days as a New York City firefighter. Is that real or ridiculous?
I'm going to think ridiculous. I think we would have heard more about that.
Howard's right. It's ridiculous.
Okay, big shot over there. You are right, Howard. It is ridiculous. Clint Eastwood was a swimming instructor in the U.S. Army. Is that real or ridiculous?
That one could be real. He's got the build.
You like that one?
I don't know if he served. Yeah, we'll say real.
Nope, not real.
It is real.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
I did not make that
Come on,
up.
It's
I
not.
Promise it's real.
It's not.
Howard, you are right. Carl, you are wrong. W-R-O-N-G, so
really?
Sorry.
I didn't even know he was in the Army.
Okay.
I didn't know that.
Well, I'm sorry. You should brush up on your Clint Eastwood.
You should brush.
You should be brushing up. okay, Howard.
That's a hint. Why don't you brush?
Okay.
This is a tight studio here.
Yes, it is. Howard, he has practiced transcendental meditation for more than 40 years. Is that real or ridiculous?
Probably real.
No.
It's real. No, he's right. You are real. Absolutely right. Come it is on. Real. I promise you.
Howard did great. Howard got did all great. Them right.
Carl, you
way
did
go,
do
Howard.
So great.
Is your, Howard, is your last name Eastwood?
Howard Eastwood.
No,
Clint's cousin. Howard,
you make me ineligible, right?
You know what? I'd give you the prize either way. You have won the desktop indoor weather station. It is brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. They are the 60 Minute Men. You can give them a call at 855-955-HVAC. Thank you so much for playing. You did great.
Way to go, Howard.
Sure, thank you very much. I enjoyed it, and I enjoy your show very much.
Thanks,
thank
my
you.
Friend. Thank you very much.
Carl was gloating over there feeling really strong about Clint Eastwood.
I believe I missed 2 out of 3.
You did.
That's what I get for bragging and saying
that's
I'm good.
That's what I told you.
See what happens, Lisa?
I always
you should
tell
learn
you that.
A lesson by that. You should learn a valuable lesson.
You know what? What's that song? Always be humble and kind. Mm-hmm. So you need to learn about the humble part.
Right. Very true.
Always
I need to eat a little humble pie.
Humble pie.
Have some humble pie.
It won't hurt you any.
All right. Well, it's time for Family Theater. This was a family drama that came to radio in 1947, lasted all the way to 1957. It was produced by Family Theater Productions, which is a film and radio studio extension of the Family Rosary Crusade founded by the Holy Cross priest Father Patrick Peyton as a way to promote family prayer. Remember the motto, the family that prays together stays together? That was what this show was all about. And top stars appeared on this series, and they did not collect a paycheck. They did this for the church, and they donated their fees so that this could be a very popular show and sort of spread God's word. And James Stewart, Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, Jack Benny, Lucille Ball, all the greats starred on Family Theater. These were inspirational stories and classics of literature, and it was a very popular series, and I think you're really going to like this episode called Lullaby of Christmas, hosted by Roddy McDowell. It's from December 19th, 1951. Here's part one of Family Theater.
The following is transcribed. Family Theater presents Ruth Hussey, Roddy McDowell, and Lois Butler. The Mutual Network, in cooperation with Family Theater, brings you a Christmas fantasy set in a framework of Christmas music. To tell you about our presentation of Charles Taswell's classic Lullaby of Christmas, we present Ruth Hussey.
Thank you, Tony Lafrano. You know, one of the wonderful things about Christmas is the pretty web of legend, song, and story that has grown up around it without obscuring for any of us, I hope, the truth of the matter. At another time of year, we might call the joyousness of spirit we experience an excess. But in the expansive mood that Christmas brings to everything, I'd use a more gentle word, a more generous description. Won't you agree that the right word is abundance? I think it's out of this abundance that most Christmas fantasy springs. Out of the fact that the real truth of Christmas is so wonderful, so dramatic, so quickening to the heart and to the imagination. And that leads us to Lullaby of Christmas, which Roddy McDowell is going to narrate for us.
This story is as old as Christmas, and yet is neither remembered nor told except by the tongueless ones, the water, the wind, the rain, and the snow, by the grasses, the trees, the rocks, and the earth. They have told the story for almost 2,000 Christmases past, and they'll still be telling it 2,000 times 2,000 Christmases to come. It will be told by a wind rustling a tree of palm or pine or of maple or mimosa. By water as it crowds against the bank or shore of brook, lake, river and ocean and all the scattered seven seas. By rain tiptoeing across the roofs and skylights of every building north, east, south and west of Greenwich. By the singing grasses of southern pampas, bush, and savanna, and by the icy twang of sleeted stubble on prairie, heath, and plain. It will be told by the sucking swamp mud and the hard-ringing frozen earth and the tumbling rock and the migrant sand. It will be told whether or not men listen, or whether or not there are men to listen. For as the storytellers are eternal, so is their story eternal. Their story of the lullaby of Christmas. Whenever someone looked in his direction and bellowed, "Hey, you!" he came running because he was eager to please. But AU wasn't his name. No one knew from whence he came, or when, or how, or why. It was quite possible that he was a forlorn and useless bit of jetsam from one of the caravans that were forever appearing and disappearing like mirages, with camel bells clanging, dogs barking, and drivers howling for right of way through the narrow, crowded roadways of Bethlehem. He might have been 8, or he could have been 9. A childish collection of angles and knobs with an animated pipe stem on each corner for an arm or leg. His clothing was an assortment of tattered rags fastened together with knots, thorns, and bits of cord. And it stayed with him when he ran merely because his greater speed was never quite equal to the greater law of gravity. And he was always running to something from something, his sandals, which had been owned and discarded by 3 much larger wearers, flapping up and down and right and left, and his bobbing head perching precariously on his scrawny little neck like a fledgling heron on one leg. And yet, there was something about the boy that made people notice him. There was something appealing in his dark eyes and something about his cherub's mouth that unlocked the heart. Now and then, someone along the street would stop him and ask his name. But when AU tried to answer, from out of his cherub's mouth, instead of words, would come a horrible sound, a scourging, piercing, ear-scraping, howling and shrieking. Yes, AU was without the gift of speech. And at night, in the stable of the inn where he made his bed, he would curl up in the fragrant hay and think of all the beautiful magic words that he would like to say. Just suppose that a miracle should take place during the night. Just suppose that he should wake up tomorrow morning and walk over to that stall and say,
"Good morning, Mr. Cow."
Oh, wonderful. And then he'd run outside to the pen and call out,
"Hello, Mr. Sheep."
Oh, magnificent morning. He could talk. He could say anything and everything that he wanted to say. And wouldn't the innkeeper's wife be surprised when she handed out the scraps for his breakfast and loudly and clearly he said,
"I'm terrible obliged, ma'am. Just terrible obliged."
And then, when he was called to do some task or errand, he could tell the innkeeper and his guests that his name wasn't A.U. Why, that wasn't any kind of name at all. It was just an easy and careless way they all had of shouting, "Hey, you!
Hey, you!
My name isn't A.U.
Hey, don't you hear me? Hey, you!
My name's Ezekiel."
But the most stupendous, overwhelming thing of all, he would be able to sing. Yes, sing as no one had ever sung before, with every word and note so clear and sweet and perfect that everyone in Bethlehem would stand rock still to listen. He would be able to sing with the other children when they played their games, and he would be able to sing right along with the foreign music maker, the one with the lyre and the tame bear who walked the roadways and sang for coins.
"Oh, a Babylon maiden will hasten the hours with kisses of honey and cinnamon flowers."
And at night in the inn, when the roaring fire was juggling fat hot sparks in the black cavern chimney, and the innkeeper and his guests were overflowing with wine and song, he'd never need hide himself in the darkest corner in fear that they would make him join in just so that they could laugh at him. No. He'd be able to stand right by the fire and listen, because he'd be able to sing that song much better than anyone in the room.
"Oh, fill the bowl up to the brim, let memory blend with wine, and drink
so, each night, before AU closed his eyes, he said a prayer for the gift of speech and song, and faithfully promised that if God saw fit to grant these great blessings to a small boy, that he would never use any words that weren't kind and gentle and reverent, and that he would never sing any songs that were not beautiful, joyful, and harmonious. Then he burrowed deep into the hay and fell asleep, warm and content in his belief that on this night, God had heard him. In the morning, when the rising sun reached through the doorway and touched his shoulder to wake him up, he would open his eyes, and then he'd open his mouth, and then very loudly and thankfully he'd say,
"Oh, thank you, God. Thank you very much."
But morning after morning, God disappointed him. And finally, after months of mournings had vanished into Egypt, Ayu knew that he would always be just as he was, as inarticulate as a tumblebug, as a wood tick, as a worm. For a few nights, Ayu cried himself to sleep in black discouragement. And then he resolved that he would never open his mouth again to make people laugh. And when his work was done, he trudged out of Bethlehem and wandered over the fields and hills. Travelers sometimes wondered when they saw his lonely little figure against the sky. And none of them knew that he really wasn't lonely at all. Why, he couldn't be lonely among friends. For he discovered that a brook running over its pebbles and stones could chatter and prattle and sing to him. And if he answered, or even if he sang, the brook didn't care a ripple that the noises he made were strange and unmusical. It went right along singing as loudly and joyfully as ever. Yes, and the winds were forever whispering or humming or caroling. Sometimes they were so filled with music that they shook their great trees and woke them up, and they tossed the great limbs and made every leaf and twig join in with the singing. So Ayu sang too. And the trees didn't care, and the winds didn't care. Neither did the rain when it thrummed on the rocks or strummed through the tall grasses. It went right on just as though his horrible din was the most sublime music it has ever heard. And then, when he was tired, Ayu would lie on the ground with his ear pressed tight against the moss and listen to the small, faraway voices. The little, scarcely audible voices deep in the ever-moving, ever-singing earth itself. The song they sang was very sweet, but so faint and distant that, try as he might, he could never learn the melody. And so, listening to his friends, the tongueless ones, Ayu would fall fast asleep. And in the days that followed, he was a little scarecrow stuffed with happiness, a standing on tiptoe happiness that was more prolific than a cottontail rabbit, an invincible conquering happiness that could summon up more legions than the Roman emperor. It was so far above the miracle he'd asked for in his prayers that Ayu took a long time every night to thank God for his generosity. He thanked him so meticulously and particularly and abundantly that his small fingers developed a cramp. And on each round, knobby knee was a round, knobby callus. And then, without the slightest warning, coming with cockcrow as any other day, wearing the same identical colors of dawn as yesterday's beneficent morning, came the dreadful day. It was begun by the innkeeper kicking methodically at the mound of hay where Ayu had buried himself and bawling,
"Ayu, come on, crawl out of there and get to work. On your feet or I'll slice out your tongue and sell it for tallow."
There you have the first portion of Lullaby of Christmas on Family Theater from 1951. Roddy McDowell doing a great job narrating this episode. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. This woman can sing.
She sure can. Do you remember that controversy with is Mariah Carey? Remember the controversy with her last year on New Year's Eve? She was outside and it was cold and she was singing and it was awful.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, she was really off key. She couldn't hear it and she was cold and her voice was cold and it was terrible.
She had an off night.
She had an off night. Even Mariah Carey has an off night. See?
Is this the woman that can break glass with her voice? I think it is. Either her or Celine Dion. They can literally hit the octave.
I think it's her. It's Mariah Carey.
It's amazing.
She's an amazing singer.
Right? I mean, listen to that voice.
Well, now there's a lot of voices. But she's really amazing.
I mean, she really can belt it out, huh?
Yeah.
Mariah Carey, wow. I'd like to see her in concert. I'd go see her, definitely, you know? I don't go to many concerts.
No,
but
you don't.
I used to go to a lot of them when I was younger.
Like in the 70s.
I mean, you know, because I was into... I lived in the basement of my parents' house. I had a whole kind of homage to classic radio. You know, I had all pictures of, you know, Humphrey Bogart and all the different movie stars, you know, on one side. And then the other side was my, you know, like, I had a disco ball and I had my record player and I had incense and all that. I had that whole kind of, you know, I was a teenager. So I had, if I invited a girl, you know, to listen to music, that was the girl area.
I understand.
And then the other area was my love of classic radio. So
I understand.
Sort of a split personality.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
And so I used to love to go see, you know, the Rolling Stones. I saw the Rolling Stones at least two or three times. I saw, you know, the, you know, so many bands. Oh, my gosh.
I used to see Fleetwood Mac,
Billy Joel.
Did you see Billy
Elton
Joel?
Elton John.
Love Billy Joel.
Billy Joel, I saw him twice. Michael Jackson twice.
Did you really?
Yeah. Rod Stewart, Whitney Houston,
and Barry Manilow.
I don't think I ever saw Barry Manilow.
The Beach Boys, a lot of times.
Fleetwood Mac was great. I had all their albums, and, you know, starting with the Rumours album. And then I saw, oh, gosh.
I was still kind of...
The Bee Gees.
Still kind of a theater nerd I was even back then.
Saw a lot of live. Yeah. And then when I, you know, when started going to college and things and working, I stopped.
Yeah.
Stopped going.
Well, you save up your shekels and maybe you can attend a concert this year.
Maybe I will. I would see Mariah Carey. Though.
I bet you would.
All right. Well, we're listening to Family Theater, Roddy McDowell. Here's the conclusion to Lullaby of Christmas.
Then the dreadful day was helped along by the innkeeper's fat and fuming wife. At mid-morning, when AU's stomach was tied in a double-bone knot with hunger, he stuck one eye around the frame of the kitchen door to let it beg for his breakfast. And the innkeeper's wife doused him with slimy dishwater and screamed,
"Don't come grunting and squealing for scraps at my door when I'm busy, you miserable gutter rubbish! Get out with the rest of the swine!"
And in the afternoon, as AU was racing through the town on one of his endless errands, a tired thong snapped on one of his oversized sandals, and the sandal went skittering through the air, purposely ignoring half a dozen people who would have merely scowled or scolded, and dropped deliberately and maliciously on the proud and helmeted head of a swaggering centurion. The centurion plucked AU out of the crowd by his rags and lifted him up off the ground and held him dangling at arm's length, demanding his name and his dwelling place. And when AU tried to answer, but only made meaningless sounds, the centurion shook him until he flipped and flopped like a limp, grief-stricken starfish. And he bellowed,
"Look at me, oh, you driveling, babbling, voiceless offshoot of a scurvy, dribble-mouthed alley rat. If ever again you foul my eyes, I'll cage you and send you to Rome to feed the emperor's lions."
And through the remaining hours of the dreadful day's afternoon, No matter how fast A.U. ran, the story of his affliction and humiliation always ran faster. It was a street, an alley, or even a doorway ahead of him. He seemed to run through a forest of pointing fingers that threatened to pin him to a wall, under a sky of leering eyes that fell and clung to him like leeches, by endless craters of jeering mouths that spouted laughter like bottomless goatskin water bags. And that night, as each hour slowly yielded to an older one, and the dreadful day neared its end, A.U. was kept late at his tasks in the inn. Anyone could believe that half the known world had journeyed to Bethlehem, and the inn was so crowded that the ancient floors seemed to sag from the mass weight of weary bone and unwashed flesh. A.U. longed to bury his shame and tears in the nestling warmth of the stable hay. But his tired, trembling legs carried him about with staggering armloads of steaming bowls and slopping mugs. Feet tripped him up, hands slapped his ears to ringing, and his knees jolted his aching ribs. The one who discovered and recognized A.U. was a huge mountain of a man whose eyes rolled like quicksilver in their bead beds of jellied fat. One hairy paw crushed a crumb of stew from his beard, while the other fastened on A.U.'s hair and lifted him, his legs still running desperately in the air, to the tabletop. Then, in a voice that would have silenced Balaam's donkey, he brayed to the listening ears,
"Hark here, my friends! Behold this miserable insect that I've captured for your examination and amusement. But you must not laugh, my friends. You must gather close with ears agape, because this struggling thing has a wondrous golden voice never equaled on land or sea or up in heaven. Oh, yes, I swear it is true. A centurion made it chirp today, and its music was so sweet it broke my heart and made the angels weep in ecstasy. Tell me, would you like to hear it sing? Got a lark, let melody spout forth. Do you not hear me? Will you sing, or shall I slit your tongue like a crow's, so you can speak like a human, eh? Sing, I tell you! Sing, sing!
And so, standing on the table, A.U. tried to sing. And at every tuneless howl, the crowd shocked its mockery. At every unmelodious screech, it roared its derision. At every discordant squeak, it loosed a thunderbolt of laughter that crashed and splintered on his head. And his mind was fear. And his body was shame. And his blood was tears. But he went on. He went on until the crowd had rung the last outstanding guffaw, the final satisfying chuckle, the ultimate forced snigger from his wretched little body. And when it released him, he ran blindly off through the dark labyrinth of Bethlehem, a terror-stricken shadow racing for the quiet hills and the warm, comforting voices of the tongueless one. There were no voices. Even though A.U. held his breath, even though he strained his ears, he could hear no sound from the tongueless ones. Even when he threw himself down and laid his ear to the ground, there was no small sound to hear. Even the little voices deep in the earth had stopped their whispering and were quiet. Then A.U. howled and babbled and tried to make the tongueless ones answer him. But they only waited and listened. And he croaked and screamed at them. But still they waited and listened. And he wept and shrieked to them. But they kept silent while they waited and listened. Just listened and waited. Then A.U. rolled over on his back to listen too. And he saw that a great white star had risen and was shining over Bethlehem. A star so bright it blinded him. And so he closed his eyes. And exhausted by the dreadful day, he went to sleep. was close to morning when A.U. returned to the inn. He tiptoed across the frosty stones of the dark courtyard and crept into the stable. For a moment, his fear held him motionless, for the stable was bathed with a bright, glowing radiance that revealed every corner and straw and peg and mote of dust. And it flowed like molten sunlight over a man and a woman and a manger where a child was cradled. Neither the man nor the woman appeared surprised to see A.U. It was as though they had expected him to come and were waiting for him. So he stole nearer, and he looked down at the child. And the child lifted small hands and smiled at him. Then A.U. felt that he must speak to this child, so he whispered,
"Hello there."
And the words he spoke were as clear and melodious as the water of the brook. Then he said,
"Hello, child."
And the words that came from his lips were as sweet as the winds, as perfect as each raindrop, and as soft as the long flowing grasses. Then A.U. knew why he'd been born never to speak until this moment, and why the tongueless ones of God's world of water and earth and air had all sung to him, and why tonight they had all been still and silent and waiting. Now the waiting was over. Now they were his voice and he was their song. And this was their song to the child of the manger.
Close your eyes, precious one, for the world is your cradle. Close your eyes, blessed babe, while we sing you to sleep. Lullaby of Christmas, lullaby for thee, precious eyes, sleepy eyes, close your eyes and sleep.
Yes, this story is as old as Christmas, and yet it's neither remembered nor told except by the tongueless ones. The water, the wind, the rain, and the snow. The grasses, the trees, the rocks, and the earth. It will be told this Christmas by a wind rustling a tree of palm or pine, or maple or mimosa. By water as it crowds against the bank or shore of brook, lake, river and ocean, and all the scattered seven seas. By rain as it patters across the roofs and skylights. Yes, and by the singing grasses of the southern pampas, bush and savanna, and the icy twang of sleeted stubble on prairie, heath and plain. The few ears that listen may wonder at the strange childlike quality in the voices of all these storytellers. But that's so very easy to understand. It is the bright, joyful, exultant tone of the boy who sang for them one early morning, one Christmas morning, one glorious morning in Bethlehem.
Thank you, Roddy, for steering us so imaginatively. Christmas time is associated by all of us with first beginnings and with the home. It's really a time of return. In spirit, we can all return to that little family of Bethlehem, centered at the Christmas crib. And that's where Lois Butler leads us as she sings Jesu Bambino, the baby Jesus.
Thank you.
autumn's flower and meet the snows upon a winter night. As for the child, the Christmas rose, the king of love and light. The
Thank you, Lois Butler.
From Hollywood, Family Theater has brought you transcribed Charles Taswell's Lullaby of Christmas, narrated by Roddy McDowell, with Ruth Hussey as hostess. Our soloist was Lois Butler. Others in our cast were Michael Edwards, Ted DeCorsia, Irene Tedrow, and Bill Johnstone. Music was composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman. Family Theater's director was Joseph F. Mansfield. This is Tony Loprano expressing the wish of Family Theater that the blessing of God may be upon you and your home, and inviting you to be with us next Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over most of these stations, when Family Theater will present our special Christmas program, The Joyful Hour, starring Licia Albanese, Anne Blythe, McDonald Carey, Jeff Chandler, Gene Cagney, Bing Crosby, Bobby Driscoll, Jimmy Durante, June Haver, Ruth Hussey, William Ludlingen, Pat O'Brien, Rod O'Connor, Maureen O'Hara, Maureen O'Sullivan, Gigi Perreault, Lanny Ross, Robert Ryan, and Leonard Warren. And next week, Family Theater will present Star of Wonder, starring Pat O'Brien. Join us, won't you? This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
That was quite a lineup on next week's show, huh? All the people that are coming on.
Pat O'Brien.
Yeah.
Reminds me of my days of New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
Pat O'Brien's.
Sure. The wee Irish. He was probably a little bit Irish. What do you think? Pat O'Brien? Think he was Irish, Lisa?
Your accent is right on.
I know.
I know.
Sure and be God, and it's right on.
Lucky Charms.
Always after me, Lucky Charms. Family Theater, Lullaby of Christmas, December 19th, 1951. Roddy McDowell, Ruth Hussey in that. Hope you enjoyed that.